Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
Focus Features presents Back to Black.
I want people to hear my voice and just forget their troubles.
Experience the music and her story.
Know this, I ain't no Spice Girl.
Like never before.
That's my daughter, that's my Amy.
On the big screen.
I want to be remembered for just being me.
Amy Winehouse, Back to Black, directed by Sam Taylor Johnson. Rated R, under 17, not a minute without parent. Only in theaters May 17th.
You know you've got a comeback in you. When you take the next step, you're going to make it count. For your career, for your family, for your life. You can earn a degree you're proud of with Purdue Global. Purdue Global is backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected and innovative public universities. This is your chance. This is your opportunity. This is your comeback. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
On the Bechdel cast, the questions asked if movies have women in them. Are all their discussions just boyfriends and husbands, or do they have individualism? The patriarchy's effing vast. Start changing it with the Bechdel cast.
Hello and welcome to the Bechdel cast. My name is Caitlin Durante.
My name is Jamie Loftus.
And we host a podcast about the representation of women in films.
It's the one you're listening to right
this
now.
This is it.
At this very second.
And
Jesus Christ.
Go on.
Well, no, I feel like we should go home. Okay. So this is our podcast about the portrayal of women in movies. We use the Bechdel test as a jumping off point to start a larger discussion about the portrayal of women in movies.
Jamie, let's pass the Bechdel test by explaining what the Bechdel test is.
Okay. So you know it's a crazy paradox?
What?
You can't describe what the Bechdel test is without breaking the Bechdel test.
Right, because you have to say man.
I also just said Bechdel test wrong.
I didn't even notice. Okay, well, let's try this. Hey, Jamie.
Hi, Caitlin.
Can you explain to me what the Bechdel test is, please?
Not without breaking it. It's like Fight Club in that way. Or maybe it isn't. I don't know.
The first rule of the Bechdel test is that you cannot talk about the Bechdel test.
The Bechdel test. And that's why this is the last episode of our podcast. It's because we realize we've been breaking the first rule of the Bechdel test this whole time, which is never talk about it. Okay. I thought this was fun.
Well, I think that passed the Bechdel test.
It did.
Wow. Okay. Did. So we're good. So now we can actually explain what it is, which is that...
Thank God we can talk about men again. Thank God. I was getting very stressed out.
So if you don't know already, the Bechdel test is a test applied to fictional media.
Yeah.
It requires that a movie, let's say, has two female identifying characters in it. They have to have names. They have to speak to each other. And their conversation has to be about anything besides a man.
We just did that.
Yes, we did.
We just did that.
But then because I just said man, that's what finally
that's
broke.
That's where you break it.
Yeah.
It's so tricky. It's a paradox.
It really is. Mm. Anywho, so we're here with a guest to talk about a wild summer flick. She is the creator and star of Gossip, which is a scripted comedic soap opera podcast. Mm-hmm. Fun. Allison Raskin.
Hi.
Hi. Thanks for being here.
Thank you so much for having me.
Anytime. So we're talking about Wet Hot American Summer.
Love it.
Yay.
It's true. I had never seen this movie before. I've rarely seen any movies. Yeah, I'd never seen it before. I'd heard a lot about it. Honestly, based on the poster and knowing who's in the cast and knowing the year it came out, I assumed it was going to do way less well than I think it actually does.
Mm.
Like, it seems like you hear, like, because this came out in, what, 2001?
Yes.
Yeah.
You hear, okay, a 2001 summer comedy, I don't think this is going to be a progressive piece of work in any way. Like, I don't think anything that came out that year is like, whoa, this is, whoa. Like,
Are you forgetting about
Shrek. I was about to say Shrek, Caitlin. Do we know what month this came out? Because Shrek came out in July and was our, of course, the last bit of innocence we had as a country was Shrek.
Of course.
Was Shrek in this year. But anyways, you know, Shrek is obviously a feminist text. But most movies, I would say, that came out in the early Bush administration through literally today are not progressive texts. Raunchy summer comedies, generally not good to women. That's what I meant.
For sure. Yes. By the way, this movie came out July 27th.
Oh, wow.
Wait, this was up against Shrek at the box office. Also, this movie was a massive failure. I think Shrek
won. Yeah, nobody saw this movie in theaters.
Story-wise, Shrek won. Money-wise, Shrek continues to win.
Yeah, this movie, Wet Hot American Summer, it was a critical and box office failure. Mm-hmm. Huge flop, but it has since developed a cult following.
And has gotten its own TV show.
Yeah, a couple different variations of it, because they've done the First Day of Camp mm-hmm. Netflix series and then the 10-year reunion.
Right. I think season. I only saw the First Day of Camp one.
I think, same.
Yeah.
So what's your history with the movie?
My history with this movie is, like, I know that I love it, but I don't ever remember anything about it.
Okay. Yeah.
You know those movies mm-hmm. where you're like, that's a good time, but, like, the specifics of it
right.
elude you? Like, sure. I know that at one point they go into town and get so high. Like, past that, I'm like, it's a bunch of funny people.
Well, it's probably because there's no cohesive story that right. really unfolds, so it's hard to remember what it's about. It's just a yeah. bunch of little, like, micro stories.
Which is, like, yeah, that's just, like, the weird thing about any, like, ensemble cast is you're like, okay, so a bunch of small things will happen, and eventually the movie will end.
Right.
Yeah.
That's what'll happen.
I feel like a good ensemble movie, though. You do have mm-hmm. the right, like, the normal arc. But it's because it's David Wayne, right? So
yeah. Mm-hmm.
He's not looking to do the normal thing.
No, he's such an avant-garde.
He's different.
Artist. So, yeah, I saw this movie for the first time in college, I want to say. Probably around, like, 2005.
Yeah.
And I really enjoyed it. I thought it was really funny and really silly. You know, it's just a silly, vaguely satirical. I don't even know quite how to classify this movie yeah, in terms yeah. of its, like, approach to what it's about. And
I feel like it's, like, making a big nostalgia appeal. Like, that's most of it is, yeah. like, the era appeal. Mm-hmm.
But I also felt pressured to like it.
Oh, did you?
Like, I feel like it's, like, weird if someone says they don't like this movie.
Sure, yeah.
Like, it's, like, you're especially hip if you like
especially if you're
like
in, it. Like, the comedy yeah, community, absolutely. I think. Yeah.
Whereas, like, some of his other movies, I feel like I can be, like, that made no sense at all.
Oh, sure.
But, what are other movies he's made?
Oh, man, he made this one with Paul Rudd and Jennifer Aniston that was, like, one of the worst things I've ever seen.
Paul Rudd's quickly becoming my enemy.
Where they went to that cult, and Justin Theroux was in it.
Oh, I don't know about this.
I do know
your bananas.
Was that called Wanderlust?
Yes.
Yes. Yes.
Oh.
Yes.
He, I think, directed a movie called The Ten, which I think I'm maybe the only person who saw that.
Whoa.
And the only person who liked it.
What was it about?
It's based on the Ten Commandments, and it's like all these little vignettes.
Yes, he did. Yeah. Kayla, why did you see The Ten?
I don't know, but it really resonated with me in a way that I can't explain. And people who had seen it, who saw me like online saying that I enjoyed it, they're like, Caitlin, what the freak is wrong with you?
As far as to publicly state that you liked The Ten. You didn't keep that to yourself.
No, you stand out for The Ten?
Look, please tweet at me.
Maybe it's really good.
Your thoughts on The Ten. It's not.
You're the only one who saw it.
But it's like similarly like silly and goofy like Wet Hot American Summer, but it's certainly not a good movie.
Right.
Well, anyway, so I enjoyed Wet Hot American Summer, the film, the artistic masterpiece that it is, of course.
Sure.
And I thought it was really silly and funny, and I liked that it's pretty much just like a goofy movie that is not taking itself seriously.
It's a goofy movie? That's a different episode.
The goofy movie.
But is it an extremely goofy movie?
Is that the sequel?
Because that's another, yeah. Which is one of my favorite. I think that all sequels should be an extremely, and then the
whatever
title of the
is,
first movie.
Yeah.
An extremely Wet Hot American Summer. An extreme, I have extreme doubts. Is the other,
oh, right. I think we've talked about this before on another episode.
Because I can't stop saying an extremely doubtful movie.
Yeah.
Sorry, go ahead.
So, yeah. So this movie, you know, it's silly and I enjoy it.
I'd argue it has more heart than other movies that go this crazy.
I agree.
Like, yeah. I think that, like, with Coop, like, we're, like, tracking him and his, like, love for Katie.
There
and,
is, like, an emotional there's an center to this
some
movie.
Some of the characters do care.
Yeah.
And that's unusual for this type of broad comedy.
That's true.
Mostly, I mean, I love Niles.
Yeah. Oh, his David Hyde Pierce.
God, I love him so much. He was one of my major childhood crushes.
Really?
It was, of course oh my God. He was.
I
of course.
Loved Niles so much. I'd stay up every night to watch Frasier, and I had a crush on Frasier, but I knew he was so unattainable. And so I was
so
like,
in your fantasy world, you had to settle for Niles?
Yes. I was just like Daphne. I had to settle for Niles. I was like, Frasier, I would be so scared to talk to him. Niles would approach me. We would get along great. We would have a marriage of convenience for years. I love Niles. And David Hyde Pierce is so great. No one sees much of his work outside of Niles.
Sure.
So
I've seen him on Broadway.
Oh, wow. Wait, in that thing about the detective?
No. Oh. It was like a movie. It wasn't a movie. It was a play. It was definitely not a movie.
Like, it was a movie. I saw a movie before.
I can't remember what it was, but he was very good in it.
Yeah, he's the absolute best. The end.
Well, speaking of not being able to pass the Bechdel test,
sorry,
it's quite all right. Shall I do a recap of the story of Wet Hot American Summer?
Good luck.
Thank you.
Can I just read off the list of names in this movie?
Yes,
because it is pretty significant. In terms of, like, most people were either famous or became famous in the next 10 years.
I don't think they were famous at the time. I think it's Bradley Cooper's first movie.
It is Bradley Cooper's first movie. It's like Amy Poehler's not quite. It's people on the cusp at this time. So Janine Garofalo, who was famous already. David Hyde Pierce, already Niles. Molly Shannon, I think, had already been on SNL.
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Paul Rudd, we knew him from Clueless. Christopher Maloney, I don't know who that is. Michael Showalter.
Christopher Maloney is from Law & Order, but I don't know if it is.
Oh, yeah, he's the chef.
Oh, okay. Gene?
The chef in Law & Order. Yes, it is.
The famous, the show about a chef that solves crimes.
Yeah. I guarantee that has been pitched.
Michael Showalter and Michael Ian Black from The State. Ken Marino, Amy Poehler, Bradley Cooper. Elizabeth Banks, early role for her, Joe Lotrulio, Judah Friedlander, and H. John Benjamin as Can of Vegetables.
Right, yes.
Lots of names.
Big names.
Lots of names.
All-star cast.
Yep.
If you're white.
it is. I was like, is every white person in this movie?
Yes.
Okay, so the loose narrative that this movie follows is that it's the last day of camp at Camp Firewood, which is a, I think, like, Jewish summer camp.
In Maine?
In Maine. Right? I think in the set somewhere in the
80s. Mm-hmm. 1981.
As an 80s baby myself, I I'm very good at recognizing the 80s. So you listed the big ensemble cast. Mm-hmm. We follow different characters around. Each of them has, like, a little story arc where, like, Coop has a crush on this girl named Katie. They're both counselors at this camp. But she's dating Andy, played by Paul Rudd.
I feel like we should point out that they're all clearly adults playing 16-year-olds.
For sure.
So that's a large part of the humor.
Yeah.
It's like when Katie's like, I'm 16.
Yeah.
<It's>
like... <you're... laughs> I think I literally yelled at my television, no, you're not.
But the movie's, like, self-aware enough that it knows that that's a big...
Minimum 30.
Yeah.
There's another scene where they're, like, making a plan to do their, like, 10-year reunion at some point. Mm-hmm. And they're like, we're all going to be in our late 20s by then. And it's like, you guys are already 35.
Yeah.
But, like, it's a joke. It's hilarious. So we've got Coop, Michael Showalter is crushing on Katie, who I think that's one of the few people in the movie who didn't go on to more, like, mainstream success.
She's done stuff. I've definitely been a big fan of hers for years because she's so beautiful. Mm-hmm. She like starred in this like really like fun dramedy where she like played a teacher who slept with her high school student. I think I was the only person who watched that show. Mm-hmm. And I can't remember the name.
Oh, cool.
Yeah,
great.
But she's been in stuff.
Yeah, but I don't think
not recently.
She was also in the OG Mighty Ducks cast. So
whoa,
we're saying she is one of the Mighty Ducks kids, I guess.
I don't know.
She was one of them. She was a teen when Mighty Ducks came out. I don't know.
We gotta do an episode on the Mighty Ducks.
Worth looking. She plays Connie Moreau in 3 Mighty Ducks movies.
Okay. Wow.
There you go.
Good for her. So we've got Coop. Friend He's crushing Amelia. On Katie. She's dating Andy, who feels very suffocated by her existing in the world. Mm-hmm. Then we've got a character named Victor. That's Ken Marino. He's trying to get with this girl named Abby, but the camp director, Beth, played by Janine Garofalo, was like, you got to take these kids out rafting. So that's
so
a whole
Ken
thing.
Ken Marino kills so many high kids. Stakes.
Yeah. So,
but then Ken Marino does kill some kids, sort of.
They don't die. Do they die?
I don't know. They disappear.
I don't think so. No, he saves.
Doesn't one drown?
He saves them. Oh, no, that's Paul Rudd letting a kid drown. Paul Rudd definitely kills some kids.
Yes.
But
I'm
Ken
sorry,
Marino it's Paul Rudd saves kids. Some kids. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then back straight.
Sorry. Didn't mean to throw Ken Marino under the bus. Paul Rudd, you're unnoticed. You killed a bunch of kids.
Then we've got Beth, the camp director. She is interested in Henry, played by David Hyde Pierce. He's an associate professor of astrophysics, so they're like trying to learn each other's interests and get to know each other.
I love them together.
it's adorable.
So great.
Another storyline we see is Gail, played by Molly Shannon. She's like the arts and crafts teacher. She's dealing with a divorce.
Women be crazy.
Right. And then she gets close to a very young camper.
I love where that storyline
is. It's so disturbing.
At the end of the movie, she marries the camper.
He's like 11.
It's very funny the way they play it, though.
Yeah.
I don't know.
And then we've got Susie, Amy Poehler, and Ben, Bradley Cooper, are producing, directing, choreographing? Yep, that's how you say that. Yeah. A talent show, which is sort of the big event at the end of this day and the end of the movie. Then we've got also Ben and McKinley, played by Michael Ian Black. They're like developing a romantic relationship. They're gay together. They get married at some point in the movie.
And they have the hottest scene.
In the woodshed?
The woodshed? Yeah. I've watched it, I think, 4 times. I was like, oh my God.
It was amazing.
I've never in my life been like, Michael Ian Black is so... Well, that's a lie. I used to have a crush on him when he was on I Love the 70s. But also, he's very hot in this movie. I was like, crazy.
I mean, I'm sure we'll get to it, but I honestly think that that's one of the most progressive scenes from that time that I've seen.
Yeah,
absolutely agree. I feel like that whole scene, because 2001, I was waiting for a homophobic joke that didn't come.
Right.
It was great, but then everyone came in a way because that scene is so hot. That's a great scene.
I see what you mean. Okay, yeah. Sure. And then there's a few like kind of more secondary characters like Gene, played by Christopher Maloney. He's like the chef of the camp. He has to learn to accept himself for who he is, which is someone who fondles sweaters, humps his fridge, etc.
It's a journey we've all been on.
Yeah. A classic
So
journey.
Throughout the day, you know, this stuff is happening. Everyone's gearing up for the talent show. There's like a game of capture the flag. There's a baseball game that doesn't actually happen. There's like just different little things to like fill in the time. And then at the end, like kind of there's no conclusion at all. Coop and Katie, I feel like they're probably the main storyline. And
they're the characters we meet first, so you just
meet
kind of
first,
assume.
Yeah, and then like I'd say
it's even with Beth and the professor.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Or because like the closest we get to like the straight men of the movie would be like Coop and Beth, kind of.
Yeah.
And the shot, I guess the movie ends on a shot of the two of them. So yeah, I guess.
Oh yeah. Because he's just been dumped by Katie.
Which is fun.
And then Beth goes, "Are you okay?" And he's like, "Yeah." And then cut to black.
Cute. I thought the ending was really cute.
So that's the movie. That's the story, if you can call it that.
I have a quick story that has nothing to do with anything. Mm-hmm. There's a girl in the little science club that Niles creates in the movie.
A woman in STEM.
A young woman in STEM.
Yes.
I think she's like 14 or something. Mm-hmm. She's like one of the actual campers, and she wears a Cure t-shirt, and I guess she goes by Cure Girl. That's the name of her character.
Uh-huh.
And a year and a half ago, I would always have this picture of this particular actress sent to me in a very specific episode of Law and Order.
That's her, isn't it? Whoa.
So I reached out to her. I was like, because she still lives here. She's still a working actress. I was like, do you want to like hang out and see if we still look alike? And so we've hung out a couple different times, and we don't look anything alike.
Oh.
Wait, you hung out with someone just because people thought you looked alike?
Yes. Yeah. So, I mean, to be, I did.
Like,
I,
for the photo, or just because you thought you'd have stuff in common?
I don't know. I never get doppelganger. Like, no one ever tells me I look like anybody. Mm-hmm. And then it was, like, this girl who, in the Law & Order episode she's in, she's 12 years old. And they're like, this looks like you today. And
that's true. I've seen the photo.
We'll put up the photo. It does look exactly like me. Mm-hmm. It's like a kid who's committed a cyber crime on Law and Order.
Oh, like you always do as a hacker.
Because I'm a hacker. Right. And so I do a lot of cyber crime. It makes sense. Our vibes are similar. But it's like a screenshot where every time this syndicated episode comes on, I get it from like 10 different people. Because it's all of like my aunts are like, did you get a job? I'm like, no, a child got a job 20 years ago. Uh-huh. Thanks so much. Anyways.
Very important question. When you hung out, did you call it a doppelhanger? Wow. I'm not sorry for that.
It was just such a strange delivery of it, because I know you're proud
Sophie
of it.
You just gave Caitlin a high five she didn't earn.
I earned it. Anyway.
His wife.
Well, let's take a quick break, and then we'll be back for some hot, spicy discussion.
Yeah, hot discourse.
We'll be right back.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
This is it, your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Me. Focus Features presents Back to Black.
I want people to hear my voice and just forget their troubles.
Experience the music and her story.
Know this. I ain't no Spice Girl.
Like never before.
That's my daughter. That's my Amy.
On the big screen.
I want to be remembered for just being me.
Amy Winehouse, Back to Black. Directed by Sam Taylor Johnson. Rated R. Under 17, not a minute without parent. Only in theaters May 17th.
And we're back. Hi.
Hello.
It's us again.
It's us.
We'll post that photo of Jamie's doppelganger, who she does doppel hang out with. And
okay, you know, I liked it better the second time.
Oh, thank you so much. Yeah. I was more confident in my delivery that time.
Yeah, confidence is key.
Thank you so much.
Yeah.
We'll post it to our Instagram, and you be the judge, Bechdel heads.
Bechdel heads.
Yeah. So, yeah, this movie, I mean, it's like a parody satire thing, but not like a very smart one. It's an extremely good movie. So it's kind of hard to take anything at face value with this movie because it's just so silly, and it doesn't really have any sort of agenda except to like just be as silly as possible, I think. Yeah. So,
but that said, I mean, I think that there's stuff for us to talk about.
Yeah.
Let's start with Beth.
Sure.
Beth is played by Janine Garofalo. She is the head of the camper, a woman in charge, I say?
Yeah.
A business owner?
She's the boss.
She is in charge. And I mean, I like her character a lot.
Yeah.
She's great. She seems to be generally respected. Like, even if they're not doing what she's telling them to, they still respect
They like her. Like, she's not like a monster, and she's not like a control freak, or you know. So
she officiates a gay wedding. Like, there people like her. She's well liked.
Right, because a lot of times you see, like, a woman in her position in media, she's, like, depicted as, like, a shrew. Like, a Devil Wears Prada, like, oh my god, what a horrible bitch, what a heinous
I feel like, especially
monster.
Because it's, like, an 80s movie, like, send-up, that would be, like, a very easy choice for the movie to have made. Mm-hmm. And they don't, which is cool.
Or, like, that she's completely incompetent.
That, too. Yeah. She's, like, a bumbling idiot.
But she's, like, right down the middle of, like, great, but not like too good, like attainable, you know, like I like her character.
Yeah, it's like she runs the camp efficiently and clearly cares enough about it that David Hyde Pierce has to purchase a book or like go to the library and get a book about running a camp to impress her. So it's like she cares about her job, but she also gets all her teenage camp counselors high. She's officiating weddings right and left. There's a lot.
She approaches that kid, and I don't remember that character's name, but it's like the kid who like hasn't made any friends, and he's like speaks in a robot voice, and she's like,
isn't that also Michael Showalter, or is that a different?
No,
he's the guy from Big Bang Theory, right?
Oh, I don't know. Really? I didn't watch that show. Huh.
I don't know. I'm so sorry.
Michael Showalter does MC the talent show as a different character. As like that,
that's
like
what I was thinking.
Corny, like stand-up comic
that,
vibe.
That made me laugh so much. That was, they loved it.
I'm so old. I ate raptor eggs for breakfast.
That was like, woohoo! It's so good.
She cares enough to like, she approaches that kid. She's like, it seems like you haven't like made that many friends and like, you know, what can I do to help? And she's like, why don't you do something in the talent show? Meanwhile, like Amy Poehler's like, no, it has to be perfect. Mm-hmm. And then I feel like he's a very important character because he like conjures up the wind.
He does.
That like blows the like space equipment away.
Which we haven't even touched on. We haven't even told anybody about that whole plot.
I forgot about that in the recap.
It's crazy that you can just drop out that plot and have the movie still sort of make sense.
Yeah, just the doomsday of like a satellite hitting the camp and causing everyone to die.
Right. So David Hyde Pierce's character, Henry, figures out that there's like this piece of space equipment like hurtling toward them. So they like build this like machine to calibrate exactly where it's going to land. And then they figure out that it's going to land right on the building that the talent show is in. So like, how can we use this machine to like deviate its course? So then they do that. But it also might have been like the wind that the kid at the end like conjures up. This movie is crazy.
It's insane.
But like also you're like, you buy it immediately.
Of course.
Like within 5 minutes, you're like, literally anything could happen in this movie. And I'd be like, sure.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And then the relationship between Beth and his name's Henry in the movie. Mm-hmm. I'm going to keep saying Niles. I'm sorry. but the relationship between Beth and Niles is really, I don't know. I mean, it's like there are definitely some tropey parts about it. But I feel like almost every trope is commented on in some way to the point where I was basically satisfied with how they treat it. Like in the first scene where she approaches him first, mm-hmm. and she's like, hi, I'm Beth, I run the camp, blah, blah, blah. And then there's that great line read where she's like asking him like, oh, I'd love for you to like tutor the kids. And he's like, oh, no, I can't. And then she's like, oh, but it would be great if you did. And he's like, no, I don't want to. And then she's like, but if you, and he's like, I said no. And that's the greatest scene I've ever seen.
Yeah.
But, you know, she's like pretty proactive in like pursuing that relationship.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
She does get a makeover.
Yeah.
At one point.
Sort of. And that she swoops her hair to one side, and that's basically all that happens.
Right. And I'm like,
I don't know. But have you ever tried that? I mean, that'll change your life.
True.
To be fair, she did, ensnare her one true love after she did that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And then I was like, oh, I almost thought it was going in the direction of like, oh, the woman needs to learn everything about the male character in order to impress him. But then he does the same thing.
Right.
So then I was like, oh, it's actually
like
kind of nice.
It feels like a mutual relationship.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Like that relationship. And then, I don't know, I liked it a lot.
Yeah. And then there's like that funny, like a comment on like the trope at the end where they're like, we've been trying to get pregnant and it hasn't been working, even though they've known each other for like less than 24 hours.
Yeah.
So it's a hilarious joke.
And then,
she's
Molly
like,
Shannon
I'm pregnant.
Marries a kid.
Right.
Yeah.
It's so silly.
So good. It's great. Yeah, so that relationship, I mean, I feel like there's really not that much to say about it. I thought it was very sweet and funny.
Yeah, it's a rare example, I would say, of a romantic relationship in a movie where the male character isn't, like, stalking her, trying to trick her.
Or vice versa.
Or vice versa. Yeah, they're just, like, they see each other from afar. They seem interested in each other, so they very respectfully just, like, meet, you know, respectful, you know,
I said no.
A relative term, but
within the rules of this world.
In this, exactly. Yeah. They figure out what each of the other person is interested in. They go and do research on that so that they have more things to talk about. And
yeah, she does lie at first and is like, I know all about astrophysics. But then she goes out and learns all about astrophysics.
So. All in that one day that the movie takes place.
That's... I love how this movie operates within time.
Yeah. That's my favorite scene in the movie because she's like, oh no, I don't actually know anything about astrophysics. How can I get out of this convo? And she's like, what time is it? And then he looks up at the sky. So great. What a great joke. But yeah, so it's like in so many movies we see like a man lying to a woman, manipulating her for the sake of like a romantic pursuit,
right,
or like stalking her, and that's supposed to be romantic, like all this stuff. So this movie doesn't subscribe to any of those very problematic things, and I guess so, like, points for that. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it is. I didn't give it that much thought when I was watching it, but yeah, it's like actually a pretty well handled like budding of a romantic relationship.
Yeah.
I also think that like the movie is about sex and love, you know, that's like what the majority of the characters want and desire, and so like in the sense that like for the most part women are talking about men, like the men are talking about women, and I think that's okay though then when that's like what the movie is about.
Mm-hmm.
But then I think that they handled those relationships well,
right,
for being a movie about that stuff,
right? Because you know what movie like that doesn't handle it well at all is Love Actually.
Oh god. Worst ensemble movie.
That's a hot take. I think I haven't looked at it with my new eyes.
Well, give the Love Actually episode we did a listen, and
it'll ruin the movie for me.
It is. Well, if you want to continue to enjoy that movie, you can never watch it again. That's really the only way you can continue to love it.
No, I'm already just thinking about moments of that movie, and I'm like, oh no.
The most famous scene is scary.
Yeah.
with the cue cards and the horrible.
Yeah.
Can I jump ahead to Katie?
Please.
Sure.
Well, I think that so Katie is the one that Coop likes, and she's like the popular girl whose boyfriend Paul Rudd is like constantly cheating on her with Elizabeth Banks.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that we expect her to end up with Coop and to be like, this guy's an asshole. I should be here with this nice guy who's like always been there for me and mm-hmm. like is obsessed with me. And that sort of plays into like the nice guys deserve the pretty girls.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But instead, she's like, I just want to fuck.
Yeah.
And you're not who I want to do that with. And my boyfriend is.
Yeah.
And I'm sorry.
there is a moment where for a second, for one scene, you think that she is going to end up with Coop because she like rushes out of the talent show and she's like, I love you. I want to be with you. Blah, blah, blah. And so you get that moment that like feels disappointing of like, oh, really? Like he's really going to, that doesn't make any sense. And da, da, da. And you get that kiss. And then it's like the next scene where she's like, I don't want to fuck you. Blah, blah, blah. And then she also calls out because the whole time, I don't know. I was like, how does she not know that Paul Rudd is cheating on her? Because a child literally drowned while he was cheating on her.
He's just blatantly doing it.
But she says, I mean, she's like, I know he cheats on me all the time. I don't care. I want to fuck him as much as I can because I'm quote unquote 17.
Mm-hmm. 16, actually.
16. Yeah. Jesus.
But I mean, in a way, isn't that so empowering?
I thought that was great.
Never see women say that.
Right.
This is the thing is like, cheating is this thing that I think is in a lot of relationships going away because people are just in open relationships.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, if you put that lens on their relationship, then they're just in an open relationship and, like, who cares? Right. Do you know what I mean? Because if she doesn't care about cheating, then that's basically what it is.
Then it's not cheating, really.
It is still cheating because he's lying to her about it. But, like, they could have easily just been in an open relationship and she would have been down.
Yeah.
So, very progressive, 2001.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's rare that you see a woman who's just like so sexually empowered that she's like, I don't really care what the circumstances are. I just want to fuck.
Right.
Because she's not like hurt by him cheating.
Right.
Like, she doesn't care. She doesn't care.
Yeah. Right. She's like, I know my boyfriend's pretty lame, but, like, he's extremely hot.
Yeah.
So, arguably, she's, like, a little superficial, but, like.
But, like, whatever. She's open about it.
Yeah. Own it. Right.
The only thing that I thought that was, like, that was definitely, and that's within this world, it makes sense. But her character at the beginning, I think part of the reason her ending is so, like, impactful and kind of like, whoa, I didn't see that coming, is because she doesn't act that way for a lot of the movie. Where at the beginning of the movie, we see her ask for more attention from Paul Rudd's character.
Attention or sex?
Not sex. No, there's a scene where she literally says, like, I don't know if I wrote down the exact quote, but there's a scene where she's just like, why don't you, like, pay more? Like, she's asking him for more emotion. She's asking him. And then she basically says, like, I feel you're paying attention to other people and not me. And so you don't get the vibe from her of, like, all she wants to do is fuck. But then in the journey of this 24 hours at the end, she's like, okay, no, now I understand what he's... At the beginning, I feel like we're supposed to think she has no idea he's cheating on her. So it is kind of like a change.
Although I would say if you rewatch the movie knowing how, like, horny she is at the end and, like, how much she just wants to have sex, if you look at her character and, like, what she says through that lens by rewatching the movie, mm-hmm. she's always like, come on, like, when are we going to, like, hang out and, like, go off and, like, hang out together?
Right.
So you could kind of read it as, like, when can we go off and have sex sort of thing. So it's certainly not explicit until the very end.
Oh, she's like, I just want to spend time with you. And then he says, fuck you.
So Paul Rudd's character, he's wild because, but he's playing what's very clearly like a kind of aggro toxic masculinity
hot boy. Yeah, he's like
bad boy,
peak fuck boy.
He's wearing,
like,
a jean jacket, he's wearing aviator sunglasses, he's always like, yeah, he, like, doesn't give a
he
fuck.
He cheats
about
on his
anything.
Girlfriend and kills a child in the same scene. Like, he's that kind of guy.
Right. But I think that's all played up for humor. And if anything is being commented on in this movie, I think, like, toxic masculinity in the form of his character is sort of, like, being commented on or, like, shed
light on.
Yeah, I feel
like when I was at camp, like, of course you love that guy. Mm-hmm. And so it, like, makes you realize, like, what a loser that guy was.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. And I also think the fact that Paul Rudd, even though he is eternally young, he's clearly not, you know, a teenager in that movie.
No.
He's, like, well into his 30s. But it is cool to, like, see someone with, like, a teenagerish swagger, like, in the body of a 33-year-old man looks fucking ridiculous.
Really he was 33 when this was...
Paul Rudd is born, so he was 32. He's born in 69, which is...
What?
Paul Rudd is 49 years old.
Oh, my God.
Just so everyone knows, there is a Dorian Gray portrait somewhere rotting away as Paul Rudd drinks people's blood and grows more powerful, I'm assuming. We don't know. It's not a proven
accurate
theory. But Paul Rudd is 49 years old. He's 32 years old in this movie.
It's insane.
It's insane. It's unfair. It's violence against all humans.
I also want to talk about Coop's approach to his crush on Katie, because at one point he says something like, you know, I love you and I love the way you laugh and I don't care that you're bilingual. Like, a bunch of, like, so silly stupid stuff, but, like, he's mostly saying that he appreciates her for her, like, personality, her mm-hmm. intelligence, her sense of humor.
But also at the beginning of the movie they have a very brief conversation and he says, that's the longest I've ever talked to her.
That's true.
So yeah. I think that they don't really even know each other. I think mm-hmm. he's just saying that stuff because that's, like, what he thinks, but really he just thinks she's beautiful.
I think that there, I mean, I feel like Coop is one of the more subtle uses of commentary in a very unsubtle movie, where he is kind of, like, set up to be this typical, like, you know, nice guys finish mm-hmm. last, but until the end of the movie, and then he gets the girl, like you were just saying, Allison.
But then he doesn't, like, he, you know,
right,
like, he doesn't get what he wants, and I think that that's cool.
And it calls out that, like, he barely does know her.
Yeah.
So, like, the things he says at the end are kind of empty platitudes, but then also, like, they do become friends throughout the weird amount of time that the movie takes place in, because mm-hmm. there's a few scenes of them alone together. There's, like, when everyone finds out that, like, he hasn't, you know, like, gotten laid, And she is saying, I guess, like, she's like, well, why not? You should be fucking as much as possible. And he's like, you know, like, sluts rock. It just has to be the right slut, you know? So I was like, that's very cute.
He's very sex positive. He's and not slut shamey, so good for him.
Sluts rock, said feminist icon Coop.
Well, then that reminds me of another character, Victor, Ken Marino's character, where he is, like, putting on this, like, persona of, like, being this, like, macho stud who fucks everyone, and he's, like, so good at sex. And then he reveals to Joe Latrullio that he is a virgin. He's never had sex before. And
it was this big shocker for us as the audience. Right. We're like...
Him?
The guy constantly talking about sex has never had sex?
Right. So, yeah, if it, again, that might be intentional commentary on sort of, you know, toxic masculinity, or it just might be a silly joke. It's kind of hard to tell. But, yeah, I don't know. Like, his character is just, like, so absurd. Although... Man, I keep thinking of all the very funny things that happened in this movie when he's like running back to camp, the bale of hay that he has to like jump over. Oh, another scene, this is a different character, but another scene that I love so much is Andy, Paul Rudd, finishing his like lunch or something and then flinging his plate. Oh, yeah. And then Beth is like, what are you doing? Pick that up right now. And he's just like, ugh.
Well, first he's like, I'll get it later. And she's like, no, pick that up now.
Yeah, and then he respects her authority because she's a respectful figure.
Let's go. There's so many characters. Gail, the Molly Shannon character.
Yes.
This is another character where at first I'm like, this is one of the characters I probably like the least, but then she still has an arc. Like, they all have tiny arcs that are mostly effective. Where we're introduced to her and kind of like another tropey character of like the divorced woman who can't get over it. Mm-hmm. And she's so divorced,
and so
she's
emotional. Handicapped.
Yeah. Yeah. Like she can't even do her job right, that she's so upset about her divorce from Judah Friedlander, which is like, talk about a twist.
Right.
Judah Friedlander thinking he could deserve Molly Shannon. But, by the end, it's like it first the laughs are coming from the fact that it's like, oh, she's so pathetic. She can't move on. She can't do her job. But then her students, especially one special guy who she does marry, even though he's 11, like coach her and get her confidence up. And then she has a moment at the talent show.
That's true.
Where she stands up for herself. Judah Friedlander shows up and he's like, take me back. And she's like, no, I'm with... She doesn't even say I'm with him now, which is great. But later we're like, oh, she knew what she was going to do. She's going to marry that kid. She's already... There's another man's...
Let's try to unpack that.
No!
Okay.
It ruins it.
Never mind.
That is something that could not have been gender reversed.
That would have been...
Then we would be having a very different discussion.
Let me keep that.
Okay, so are we saying that it's the kiss? At least we never see them kiss, because we do see Abby kiss that kid named Moose at the end.
Oh, well, I just want to say that I don't support older women and children. I'm just saying, like, in our society, it tends to be more accepted, even though it shouldn't be.
Let the record reflect that we here on the Bechdelcast do not support adults in romantic relationships with children.
Ever.
I know that's a hot take, but but we are not for that. But yeah, it's just like, I get it, they're doing it for the joke, and it is.
But again, it's the older woman and the younger boy.
Right.
Because that is true. Like, I feel like until very, very recently, that's always been viewed as, like, great job, man.
Yeah, for sure. Like,
cool, you got an older woman, great for you. And, like, only, like in the last 2 weeks, people are like, actually, that's still statutory rape.
That's still, yeah. Right.
Yeah. Yeah, because you hear stories about, like, teenage boys having sex with their, like, teacher, female teachers, and, like, the idea for a long time, and still a lot of people think this is like, yeah, way to, like, good
what
job.
A stud. Right.
Yeah.
There's, like, this belief that, like, boys can't be taken advantage of.
Right. Really. Which
doesn't make any sense, because when they're taken advantage of by men, everyone understands that that's, like, not appropriate.
Right.
So So yeah. Let's unpack that for a few hours.
I mean, there's perhaps hypermasculinity is alive and well in our society.
What? No.
I 100% agree with everything that was just said.
Good. Let the record show.
It made me laugh. One more note on the Gale character. Inside of that storyline, there were a few like cool lines from whenever the kids are pumping her up, which is not problematic for kids to be supportive of their perhaps suffering teacher. I mean, it is problematic for her to be like, here are my very personal issues, but it's a movie. But there are female students that are encouraging her as well. Like they're like, there's a lot that men do that's inexcusable. And they're basically, her like young students are rejecting like hypermasculinity in theory. And right. She's like, oh, I've never thought of it this way. Maybe Judah Friedlander is a loser and blah, blah, blah. And so I thought that was good. I don't know why. I started anti this storyline and then for some reason just like violently defended it. So
the youth is the future.
It's true. Yeah. All right, we still have 400 characters to talk about, so let's take a quick break, and we'll be back in a second.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
This is it, your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Focus Features presents Back to Black.
I want people to hear my voice and just forget their troubles.
Experience the music and her story.
Know this, I ain't no Spice Girl.
Like never before.
That's my daughter, that's my Amy.
On the big screen.
I want to be remembered for just being me.
Amy Winehouse, Back to Black, directed by Sam Taylor Johnson. Rated R, under 17, not a minute without parent. Only in theaters May 17th.
And we're back. So who do we want to do next?
There's a few small quickies. There's Lindsay, the Elizabeth Banks character. Mm-hmm. Her thing is that she fucks.
She's very horny.
She's a horny woman.
Aggressively going after Andy, Paul Rudd. Mm-hmm. He is receptive to it, even though oftentimes his girlfriend Katie is right there.
Wild.
But then he decides, so they make out a few times. One of those times a kid does drown on his watch. And then he throws another kid who was like his swimming partner out of a van to hush him up.
Paul Rudd's the kid killer. Yeah.
But also those scenes make me laugh a
lot. They are really, the drowning scene, I was dying. I will say, Elizabeth Banks, early in her career, and I think she's so interesting. I really like her. And she, like, once she, and I feel like this is a kind of a common path for female actors almost by nature of how careers work. Yeah, by default is what I was going to say. She spoke out about it later, but early in her career, there's a lot of roles like this that she's given over and over and over. Pretty clearly because she's very talented. She's so funny in this movie, mm-hmm. but she's not given much to do kind of because of her body type and because of how she looks.
Yeah.
She plays a very similar role that is not commenting on anything in The 40-Year-Old Virgin. Just like her early in her career.
Who is she in The 40-Year-Old Virgin?
She fucks Steve Carell for no reason. It's a very frustrating movie to watch her in. Like, it's basically...
Did he pick her up at that bar? She's the one who's like wasted?
No, that's Leslie Mann. She works at like a bookstore, and Seth Rogen, who should be deported back to Canada, can't say it enough. Basically, Seth Rogen sends Steve Carell's character in to be like, hey, she's wearing a thong, so you could fuck her. And then Steve Carell goes to her, and she's like, who's this hottie? Like, it's just the whole scene is insane.
Yeah.
It's like a porn.
But like Elizabeth Banks's early career is littered with characters like this in a way that makes me like frustrated for her, because we know now she's capable of so much more and has like done a lot of good stuff.
I think that's what drove her to produce and to direct and to be more in the creative position so that she could have those roles that were meatier.
So even though she's like good in this movie, we know that she's capable of much more. So I was like a little frustrated.
Right.
Yeah.
Also the founder of Hoo Ha Ha, which is a celebration of women in comedy and like empowerment of women doing comedy stuff.
Very true.
Yeah.
And then the year, I mean, this is like the year before she's like rejected from being given the part of Mary Jane Watson in the first Spider-Man movie because she was too old, even though she was the same age as Tobey Maguire. So,
oh my God, really?
Yeah. She has a very small part in Spider-Man, but the part, I mean, Tobey Maguire was too old to play Spider-Man.
Right.
He was like 28 or something, and Elizabeth Banks was 28, and they were like, actually, Tobey Maguire's 28, but Kirsten Dunst is 17, so.
She was only 17?
She was only 17 in that movie. So
life's crazy.
Just a bunch of upsetting fun facts about. So in this movie, I'm like, man, this is the era where Elizabeth Banks is not getting her due.
Right.
Makes me pissed.
Yeah. Well,
she's shown us, though.
Yeah. Wait back 17 years, and then we see her full potential.
Right.
Yeah. She's basically only in this story to be seen making out with Paul Rudd a few times and to have barbecue sauce all over her face.
That was fun.
That was fun. But her talents are underutilized, and that character is barely written. Like, yeah she's kind of
horny.
I thought for some reason before I started rewatching this, I thought that she had a much more like crucial role in the story. And then I was like, oh no, she like hardly does anything. She's only there to make out.
She wasn't
with Paul
famous
Rudd.
Then. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like, so like when we think of a movie with her, we're like, oh, she's going to be the star. Yeah. Like, she's going to have a big role.
No one uses Elizabeth Banks in a meaningful way until like 2008. It's crazy.
Yeah. Huh.
Anyways,
shall we talk about Susie, Amy Poehler's character?
Yeah.
She, I think, is the only female character whose storyline does not deal with a romantic relationship to a man.
True. Yeah.
Yeah. So that was interesting. She's all about making the talent show the best it can possibly be.
Peak theater kid.
I can't remember.
So
So she's working closely with Ben, played by Bradley Cooper. And I can't remember which of them is like the, she's the producer and he's the director of choreography, or vice versa. I forget who exactly has what
role. I think she'd have to be the producer, right? She has she's so intense.
Right. Yeah. So she's working closely with him, and they're both like these like kind of authoritarian, like artistic types to be like, well, this has to be like this. And these kids fucking suck at singing. And this is such a travesty, which I find to be very funny.
Because then the kids do fine.
Yeah.
They do a really good job.
And she's like, oh, that's horrible.
Bullshit.
But yeah, so I enjoyed that there was at least one storyline that doesn't tie her to like a romantic interest.
And another character who we see a few different sides of, where most of her spoken lines are very uptight, like, oh, I'm a theater director. But then she's also heavily featured in the scene where they get so high they almost die, and she's like having fun, and she's like, she's friends with Katie, apparently. There's like a few different scenes where they're like, like, you know, friend cuddling or whatever. And so I was like, oh,
she's also like so supportive of the marriage.
Yeah.
Between
Ben. Oh, yeah,
Ben
she's like
and,
playing a flute or a recorder.
She's playing a flute, yeah.
So she's like super okay with that, and like,
Susie's got a bunch of stuff going on.
Yeah.
We don't
she has a full life.
Yeah.
She does.
We don't see that much of her on screen. We're kind of filling the blanks, but like,
and Amy Poehler's just so good that it's, I feel, like you feel like you see her more than you actually do because every
she
time you see her.
Yeah,
she,
spotlight.
I mean, she buries Bradley Cooper every time.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, Bradley.
But can you imagine them now? She would still now, too.
She would still bury him now. That's why they have not appeared on screen together. Right.
Who else do we have?
We have Abby.
Abby, yes. Mm. Abby is another very horny girl.
Yeah. I'm kind of really into how horny all the girls are.
Yeah.
Especially because they're not ever, like, shamed.
No, they're never shamed. And the boys sexual. Are, too. Like, I think it's just a commentary on, like, this time in your life when, like, your hormones are just, like, out of control. Mm-hmm. And you're, like, in this contained space with, like, very minimal supervision. And then they just, like, turned it to 11.
Right.
Because the movie starts with, like, a bunk full of, like, what are they, like, 11-year-olds?
Yeah, just, they're
like,
pretty young.
Everyone is just making out under the covers, and then they, like, sneak out.
Uh-huh. And then there's, like, the shot of, like, all the campers from every cabin, like, having to run back to their own.
Yeah. The horniest movie of all time.
So much horny depth.
But it's that's, like, what Jew camp is. Like, from what I never went to a Jewish camp. I went to regular camp, but I heard that Jew camp was, like, I'm Jewish, I can say this. It was, like, even more, like, sexed up than, like, regular sleepaway camp.
Fun.
Man, my sleepaway camp wasn't horny at all.
I went to Girl Scout camp.
Sucks was it horny?
You guys.
It was unfortunately not that horny.
God damn it. I want to go to a horny camp. It's too late. It's too late.
You know what? I don't think so.
Abby and Lindsay make out at the end.
Yes.
There's a scene between the two of them. How did you get – where did you fall on that? I wasn't sure.
Well, that –
because I'm like, is it being played for laughs? It kind of is.
I think it is.
Yeah.
And I think – these are two of, like, the horniest characters we see. Let's put them together and have them. I think the idea is that they're so horny that it doesn't matter who they're kissing. So I don't know if it's even
it's like
that they're,
end of the world,
like, queer characters. Kiss. It's more that they're just, like, these are two such horny people that they'll make out with a kid. They'll make out with a woman, even if they aren't queer.
Abby's the one that makes out with the kid, right?
Yes. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay.
So
okay.
When we dissect this movie out loud, there is a lot of problems.
Right. So, yeah, I think it was played more as a joke and less as... Although, like, who knows? They might be bi, they might be, you know, pansexual, who knows?
We simply don't know them very well.
Exactly. So I think with the context we're given about their sexuality, it's not that much because up till then we've only seen them kissing men literal boys.
Literal boys.
So that their sexual preferences aren't really explored enough to know whether or not they're queer.
That moment I was like, oh, this is kind of a bummer a little bit because it is kind of being played for laughs in a movie that otherwise dealt with queerness, I thought, in a way more mature way than most movies in its genre would. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, oh, that's kind of a throwaway joke because I think we're led to believe that they are not queer. And there's nothing in the subtext of the movie that would suggest otherwise.
Except for that one.
Except
joke.
For that one. But it's a joke.
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I didn't, like, love that, but also, I don't know. I guess I'm kind of just like...
There's another kind of problematic moment where a lot of the counselors are kind of taking off their clothes and, like, getting into they're like in their bikinis and they're about to, like, take a dip in the pond or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I think it's JJ, Gary, and McKinley is there too, I think. And they're basically just, like, watching them. So it's like, but the way it's shot is, like, very male gaze where it's, like, panning up and down their, like, scantily clad bodies. And, like, so I get it if you want to show kind of toxic male characters gazing at women and, like, make a commentary on how, like, that's kind of gross because that's what's happening. Mm-hmm. But also the way it's shot means that we're seeing it through their lens, which is still the male gaze, and it's still, like, these lingering,
it's
like
having it both ways,
right?
Yeah. It's like, here's, he's so gross, but also you get to see it too. Like,
yeah. So that's when, like, McKinley, who has no interest in women, sneaks off and he's like, I don't care about what seeing girls in their bikinis. And then we see him go into, like, the shed and start having sex with Ben. So let's talk about that.
It's the best thing.
We've been waiting so long to talk about that.
It's a great scene.
Yeah.
It's incredible.
It's, like, steamy and hot.
It's not played for laughs at all.
No.
I'd say it's, like, the most genuine of this, like, the makeout scenes. Mm-hmm. And, like, I mean, it's a beautiful moment.
Right.
I really thought it was great.
Because a lot of the other, like, sexy moments in the movie are played for laughs because it's like either characters, like, shoving gum into their mouth right before they make out, or, like, a character taking her shirt off for no reason, or, like, a character's face, like, covered in barbecue sauce.
Or so, it feels like it was so planned, or, like, it was, like, a goal versus just, like, a genuine attraction between two people.
Right.
And this is just like, they have just like incredible chemistry.
Straight sexuality as portrayed by this movie is fucking gross. It's nasty.
Yeah.
And it's stinky and it's dirty. And then you see this like incredible sex scene in a shed where you're just like, I didn't know I wanted to see Michael Ian Black shirtless. I didn't know. Mm-hmm. And then I did. And now I
can never go back.
And then the way their storyline plays out, I thought it was like cool to see how many, you know, because there are like gay slurs used in this movie, but the characters who use them then witness the wedding, and you see that there's a good portion of this camp in 1981 that is so supportive of this wedding. We're playing flutes, where, you know, like the head of the camp is officiating the wedding.
And then those characters come around because
and they change.
So,
yeah.
So they use like the homophobic slurs, and they're, it seems like they're grossed out at first. But then, and this is all, this is played
all in that
scene.
One day.
And this is played as a joke, but I think the joke works. Because you think that they're horrified and disgusted by their same-sex relationship, and there's a scene where they like, where JJ and Gary go and like confront McKinley and Ben, and they're like, "Hey, McKinley, Ben, this is for you," and you think they're gonna like assault them or something like that, but they buy them like a chaise lounge, and they're like, "Here, we just bought this for you. I hope it matches with your other furniture," or like whatever.
And they're like, "Oh my gosh, it does!" and then queer bashing is resolved at this camp forever.
It's... So yeah, those like characters that start out being homophobic like very quickly learn their lesson and come around. If only it were that easy.
Yeah.
I want to go back to their sex scene though. Queer characters are so underrepresented in media that it's a horrible travesty. When they are represented, it's usually a horrible misrepresentation. And even if they're represented in a positive light, we usually don't get to see, especially men kissing other men. Mm-hmm. And definitely not gay male sex. Like,
right.
It'll
maybe like cut off right at the kiss or like you don't.
Right.
Yeah.
So even mainstream movies about queer characters in a romantic context, we might, if we're lucky, we get to see two men kiss. And even that's rare.
We're real lucky.
You know, I got my fingers crossed. I just want to see men kiss, which is true for me. But the fact that you like see. It's not a graphic sex scene.
It's the way that you treat a sex scene between like a straight couple in like a PG-13 movie.
Yeah.
Do you know,
yeah,
like it's like a
fade to black.
It's like kind of like a Cruel Intentions level of like a sex scene where it's like really hot and like when you're a kid and you watch it, you're like, this is incredible. But then like as an adult, you're like, oh, I'm not actually seeing anything scandalous, but they like created this feeling in this moment.
Right.
That felt very sexual.
For sure.
Right.
Yeah, so I just...
Even though it's just, like, close-ups on their socks.
Yeah. Even so, like, I think it's pretty fascinating. And does this movie handle queer culture super well? And is it super responsible? I would argue, like, you know, it could be worse, it could be better. But the fact that you do see, like, a same-sex male sex scene in this movie when that almost never happens...
And
they then get married.
Yeah,
they're like in love. It's not just like, oh, I experimented.
Right.
Yeah. I can't get over this.
It's so beautiful.
It's like really hot, and then later it's beautiful. It's great.
What a journey that one day.
Yeah. I mean, as a straight person, I see scenes like this, and I'm like, there's probably something problematic here, but I don't know quite what it is because I'm, like, seeing it through the lens of a straight lady. But
right. If any listeners have additional thoughts on this scene, please let us know.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, please.
Or if anyone just wants to, like, talk about it.
Or, yes, like, or if anyone just, like, wants to, like, watch the scene with us because we really like the scene and we think it's very hot.
Yes. Who else do we have to talk about?
We could talk about Jean. I don't know. I mean, Jean is the lunchman. The lunchman. Jean the lunchman. It's hard with a movie like this because I could say perhaps that they are because his whole storyline is when he got back from Vietnam, he was different. And so his whole storyline is a veteran PTSD joke. that's worth saying. And how he has multiple personality, like it plays multiple personality disorder as a joke. It plays PTSD as a joke. It mm-hmm. plays being a veteran as a joke. It portrays veterans that are crazy, but then it's portraying veterans that have mental illness but are also really cool with it, which is not really a realistic portrayal of anything in the world of the movie. I honestly don't know where to fall on it, but it's worth acknowledging that his whole character is a big PTSD mental illness joke.
Right. And that has maybe manifested into like some interesting kink things that he is now into.
Sure.
Fondling sweaters and having dick cream.
And dick cream.
So yeah, the way that whole thing is handled.
Hallucinations in the form of H. John Benjamin.
I would argue that that character is real and a camper at the camp. I think that can of vegetables is, I think our vegetable listeners, our cans of vegetable listeners, mm-hmm. of which we have many.
I'm sorry if I made you not feel seen.
Right. I think they're real and we need to respect them as they are.
My deepest apologies.
It's okay.
I think that we touched on every character.
There's one other named female character of the adults, and there might be some like of the campers, the kids, but they so it's rarely play the into this story
they're not like full characters.
Right. There's Nancy, the nurse. She works at the like infirmary.
Oh yeah.
The big moment that she has a few moments. She like basically has to remind several adults what a library is and how to use it.
I forgot about that.
And she goes up to Beth whenever Beth is saying that she's going to go into town, and Nancy says, "If you're going into town, can you pick me up something at the drugstore? My husband's coming today, and I need some lube for my pussy." So, does that scene pass the Bechdel test? We'll find out, but
stay tuned.
Yeah. So she is also extremely horny and sexual. So another example of a sexually liberated progressive gal in the movie. And I guess she's meant to be older if she has a husband. Because I feel like some of the characters are like
some are older.
Gail, yeah, Gail, who is like married and divorced, and Nancy must be adult. So they're not like the counselors who are like, you know, these 16-year-old kids. But yeah, I mean, there's hardly anything to say about her aside from the fact that she is very horny and wants to have sex with her husband.
Everyone in this movie is very horny.
It's wild. It's a horny,
but it's an equal opportunity, you know, provider.
Sure. Oh yeah. Yeah, I mean,
so I support that.
Literally every person in this movie and can of vegetables is horny for someone
or
something.
He sucks his own dick, so
there you go.
He's like, and I do it.
So dumb. Oh boy.
This is the dumbest movie, but so fun. Yeah. So much fun. Does anyone have any other thoughts about the representation of women in Wet Hot American Summer?
I think pretty good.
Well, let's talk about whether or not this movie passes the Bechdel test.
By everything I could tell, for sure it does a lot of different times.
Yes.
When, though?
So, by our standard, we just need a two-line exchange.
Okay.
So, it's a low bar for us, and yet so many movies don't bother to even try. Mm-hmm. But there's a scene in, like, the arts and crafts classroom between Gail and then
Valerie
is named. Mm-hmm. Valerie's like, hey, we could draw with some markers. And Gail's like, listen, Valerie, I need you to be helpful here. I do not need you to undermine me. And Valerie's like, but there's only one crayon. Like, we could color with these hundreds of colored markers. And then Gail starts sobbing.
But does that count because there are male campers in the scene?
The way that we do it, our interpretation of it, it does.
Okay, great. I play by your rules.
We are
your house,
experts.
And I play by your rules.
The first time I had it counting was there's like a very dumb exchange between Beth and Nancy, where like Beth says like, we got through another summer except for a couple kids who became lepers, and then Nancy says, good one, Beth.
Oh,
you're like, yeah, that technically passes.
Okay. Unless the campers who are now lepers were all boys.
Oh,
well,
no,
we don't receive more info.
That's true.
Oh, no.
Then there's that scene between Beth and Katie that is the subtext of it is, yeah, Katie, you're hot, right?
But that's about seducing a man.
Right. That one
In the subtext, it's tricky. I don't know.
This one, a man is never mentioned until the very end of that conversation, which this conversation's maybe like a minute or two long, so it's pretty long. Katie's like, you dog, you have a crush on someone. And she's like, I do have a crush. I just don't think he's interested. But up until that part of the conversation, a man is not mentioned. But you're right.
But we know why she's asking.
The subtext of that conversation is so that she can be more physically appealing to a man. Right. So I would say that does not pass for that reason. Mm-hmm. Let's say that context isn't there. And they're just talking about, like, how do I be more hot to feel better about myself? They are talking about clothes, pants. Pants get brought up a lot. Yes. It's like, what is this? The sisterhood of the traveling pants?
Swish. Waited all episodes to say Swish,
an unbelievable reference.
Wow. You're welcome. And yeah, they talk about like clothes and hair and like, you know, stereotypically feminine things.
Yes.
So still not great, even if it did pass.
There's another Beth and Nancy passing moment where Beth asks Nancy what, and again, it is the subtext would be she's getting something to impress David Hyde Pierce. Mm-hmm. On paper, she asks Nancy where she would find a book, and Nancy tells her a library.
Right. And then she's just like, oh, right, great work. Yeah. So right. That passes, but again, yeah, Beth is asking so that she can impress a man. So with the subtext, it's I would tricky. Say it does not pass. I don't know. It's just, man, it's almost as if the Bechdel test is imperfect. Flawed, and yeah. Not the greatest litmus test. Let's see. There's a scene between Susie and Beth. It's after Beth is like, hey, like, nerdy camper, why don't you do something at the talent show? And Susie's like, how dare you usurp my authority? I've been busting my balls to make this thing great, and everything's still a mess, and the kids are a bunch of amateurs. So she's like going on this like long tirade to Beth. But Beth never responds, so that doesn't pass. I would say, actually, that this movie does not pass.
That's what I thought.
Because of all of the subtext.
Yeah. But wait, what was the one? There was one where you guys commit, the one about the crayons and the markers.
But that scene, but I think if we're going in on the subtext, that series of lines she's is just a run. Yeah, that's a run up to her bursting into tears over her ex-husband.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, she's breaking down emotionally because she's so distraught
right.
because of her husband. So yeah, that whole, the subtext there is still revolving around a man. Right. So let's say this. If you're just reading a lot of these conversations on paper and don't know the subtext of them at all, the movie would technically pass a few times. Mm-hmm. But when you add the subtext back in, all of those conversations have to do with a man, which, yeah. as you said, it makes sense. This is a movie about romance, largely hetero romance. So it makes sense that, you know, if women are talking, it's because of a romantic interest in some regard. So, right. yeah, I don't know. I would say that with subtext, the movie does not pass. That's
but I'd still say it's rather progressive for the time.
Agree.
Yeah, so well, let's rate the movie on our nipple scale. 0 to 5 nipples is our range, and we rate based on its portrayal and representation of women. I would say, for me...
Go on.
It's weird because this movie's so silly and so stupid that, like I said, it's hard to take anything kind of at face value because the intent of the filmmakers is often not very clear. The jokes kind of maybe undermine some of the stuff. And it's like, does this movie have so many horny women in it because the filmmaker wanted to portray like a sex positive narrative of like female characters like owning their sexuality? Or is it because the filmmaker just wanted to have like a bunch of horny teens because that's funny? Kind of hard to say. What does come across is it may be a can.
I think it's both.
I think so.
Okay, so let's say it's both.
Because there's no slut shaming.
That's true.
Normally, yeah. when it's just the second one, there would be some of like, oh, she's a whore, you know. And there's not. Right. There's none of that. Right. So.
I mean, compare this movie
a little bit to Abby. There's a few moments where they're like, she's the sluttiest girl at camp.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
There's a few.
True. If you compare this movie to like Sleepaway Camp, which is another movie about teens away at a summer camp, and very different genre, but in that movie you follow the tropes of like any women who have sex get murdered because right. horror movie.
Right.
So at least, and that's just, you know, a way of like shaming women for having sexuality, basically. So at least no women get murdered in this movie. So for that, I give it 5 nipples. No, I would say I'm going to give this like a 2.5. it's progressive for its time, but I don't think this movie's going out of its way to like be progressive or to make any profound statements about like gender politics or anything like that. I think because of the movie being as like silly as it is, it sort of by accident has some like interesting female characters who have agency over their own sexuality and things like that. But we also see, you know, fairly well fleshed out female characters in like Beth and her being in charge and like the respected leader in the community. Stuff like that's nice. But I also think that it's almost too stupid to be like a movie that we could classify as a feminist text.
I would argue that's not fair. Like, I don't think that you can say that based on a genre. Like, I think if a movie follows through on like what type of movie it is, it can still be excellent as that type of movie.
Sure. And this is not to say that I'm putting all comedies in this.
No, I mean, this is a broad absurdist comedy.
Right.
But I think that it's still, like, I'm going to rate it 3.5.
Interesting. Okay.
I think that Beth very easily could have been a male character, and mm-hmm. she wasn't, and she's the leader of the entire camp, and she's like our backbone of the story.
Yeah.
And I like her as a character, and I also like how sex positive the movie is.
Yeah.
And how progressive it is about that, the gay couple.
The perfect. I mean, because this movie happened, the world's most perfect scene was committed to film, and for that we have to be grateful.
That's okay.
I'm going to hit it with a 3. For all the aforementioned, I mean, it is great to see like a teen female character like embrace their sexuality and not be punished. Especially, I think that was a really good point, Caitlin, of like in the context of camp where teenage girls are always punished for sexuality at camp.
Right. Same thing with our listen to our Friday the 13th episode where we talk a lot about
murder
that.
Camp. So it's good to see a bunch of horny nastiness. That's great. I love it. I love that scene. Obviously, it is the whitest movie of all time.
So white.
Worth mentioning. But I agree, especially considering this came out in 2001. I feel like as far as 2001 goes, this is pretty much as good as it's going to get for its time.
My rating was for 2001 film.
See. Okay.
Because the ethnicity issues, like the diversity issues are huge.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Again, I've only seen the Netflix series of this, like I think the first day of camp. I've seen, mm-hmm. I think I watched that the whole way through. They introduce a few new characters. I can't remember if any of them are people of color or...
I think it stays pretty white.
So yeah.
We found the fatal flaw.
Right. In this otherwise perfect movie. Yeah, so I'm going to give it 2.5 nipples, and I'm going to give my nipples one to McKinley, mm-hmm. one to Beth, and my half nipple will go to Susie because I appreciated that she was an artistic director of talent, which is something that I used to do. Mm-hmm. So, like, I really identified with
brave.
Her. I know.
She's so brave. I'm going to give, I had 3, I'm give one to Beth, I'm going to give one to Abby, and I'm going to give one to Gail.
All right.
Yeah.
Would you like to give your nipples away?
Oh, sure.
As rewards?
Yes, I'll give one to Beth, one to McKinley, one to Katie, and then half to Susie.
Great.
Cool.
Excellent. Allison, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you so much for having me.
Where can people follow you? What would you like to plug?
I'd love to plug my own podcast, Gossip, which is a scripted comedy that's available wherever you can find podcasts. You can also go to gossippodcast.com. And then you can find me personally at Allison Raskin wherever. And then my YouTube channel is Just Between Us. And my book is I Hate Everyone But You.
And Yay. Just Between Us is with friend of the cast, Gabby Dunn.
Yeah. Same with the book.
Yep.
Awesome. Ooh. You can follow the Bechdelcast on social media. You can rate and review us on iTunes. You can go to our website, Bechdelcast.com. And you can subscribe to our Patreon. Mm-hmm. Gets you 2 bonus episodes every month, and it's only $5 a month.
Wow.
Woo. Well, shall we all go off and be horny at camp together?
Yeah,
it
sure.
It is the
let's
summer.
Go. Let's go. Okay. All right, I'll see you there. Okay, bye.
Bye. Bye.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
You deserve a moment to yourself every single day. And a delicious bite of a Keebler Sandies can give you that comforting pause. Give yourself a delicious escape from the afternoon with the melt-in-your-mouth magic of a Keebler Sandies. This magic is baked into simple shortbread cookies by Ernie and the Keebler Elves. So as life continues to fly by, make the most of your me moment. Take a pause and enjoy a Keebler Sandies.
Hey guys, back at the playground again, huh?
Yep. You know what this playground could use? A wine country.
Heck yeah. And some waves. So we could go surfing.
Oh, yeah. Ah, love that.
A redwood forest would be cool.
I'm in.
Ah, ski slopes.
Let's do it.
Can a girl go shopping?
Yeah, baby.
Wait. Did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.